This is Monty in the Morning, the show Phoenix Magazine readers voted number one talk radio show in Arizona.
Number one during your morning commute.
Number one whenever news breaks during your day.
And number one whenever and wherever you want to talk sports.
Now it's time for Monty in the Morning.
Hey, yo. Good Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Yeah, we broadcast live every day on YouTube. Just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And again, if you are on Periscope, make that switch right now. Flip over to YouTube, download the YouTube app, search for The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. We're live every day. We cut up highlights so you get all the highlights of the show. And then hit like and subscribe. Hey, Jake.
Hello.
Are you excited that Baker Mayfield's on the show today?
Yeah, he's on the show. He's making an appearance, and we may just keep him for the foreseeable future. I'm not sure yet.
If you are not watching this show live, we have added a small feature to Jake's set, his side of the YouTube live podcast wall.
The thing.
It is a Baker Mayfield fathead. That didn't Baker send you his fathead?
Yeah.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Baker, I know, bro. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show today. I appreciate it. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Baker's just chilling in the cut.
Yeah.
With Jake.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, the way that Fathead made that thing, he is staring at you.
If you guys ever want, kick it. We'll flow.
Yeah, bro, I'm here, man.
I love it. He is absolutely staring at you, which I think is amazing. We should probably
get an erection.
Well, you know what? When we pulled that thing out of the box this morning,
no,
the fathead, not the erection, which was a fathead. But anyway, the point is, you were pretty excited this morning to see Baker's fat head, weren't you?
Yeah, it was so great to see his fat head, and I think that now that he's on the wall behind us, I mean, the show is complete.
We should probably stop. We should probably start talking some NBA hoopage. Interesting times for the Utah Jazz, Jake. And one of the things I think that we've talked a lot about on this show is that the Jazz tend to be limited offensively. And you don't have a lot of depth, and in my opinion anyway, you don't have a lot of diversity in the way that you play basketball if you're the Utah Jazz. And so it is not surprising to see that they are on a historic pace for shooting threes. And when I say a historic pace, it is number of threes per game. It is, you know, in general, the best way to say it is they are living and dying on the three. And I think we've seen over the history of this league, whether that is the Golden State Warriors, the Houston Rockets come to mind, when you live and die on the three, Jake, you are not long for this NBA world.
Yeah, I just think it's really tough to make an NBA three by it's just really tough to make that shot. And so when you talk about shooting it in volume, you know, you got to make a lot of those to be able to win games. Like, you can't shoot 30% from three and win an NBA game as a team. And so I look at this roster and I say, well, what led them to going to this format where they're shooting so many threes? Well, I think the roster they've built caters to that. You know, you look at Joe Ingles, you look at Bogey.
Jingles, please.
Jingles, Bogey. Royce O'Neal from time to time will take his fair share of threes. I look at Jordan Clarkson, obviously Donovan Mitchell. So you got a bunch of guys who like to shoot the basketball. The problem is that you don't have a bunch of guys who can run an offense and get to the basket consistently. And then you have the Rudy conversation, which we've, you know, had so many times on this show. So I think you look at their roster and unfortunately it kind of backs them into this corner where they're forced to shoot a bunch of threes. And yeah, I think, you know, the difference between them and the Golden State Warriors is the Golden State Warriors, you know, they don't just shoot threes, but they shoot the three at an elite level. You're talking about two of the best shooters the game's ever seen. The Jazz don't have that. You know, they're I'm not going to say they're mediocre shooters, but they're not shooting at the level the Warriors were.
Oh, I don't think they're mediocre at all, and I would agree with you. That's probably the wrong terminology to use. But when I look at where the Jazz are at this point, I just think you're not on that level. Like, you don't have, you know, the best 1-2 punch shooting combination the NBA's ever seen. You didn't add a guy like Kevin Durant. who is arguably the best scorer in the NBA right now. You know, you didn't have James Harden on the Rockets. You don't have that guy. And with all due respect to Donovan Mitchell, I think he has exponentially improved his shooting, mid-range and three ball. But my biggest concern with this Jazz team is that all of these threes they're making are covering a lot of the scars, are covering a lot of the wounds that exist on this roster, a lot of the handicaps on this roster that are going to prevent them from being dominant in the Western Conference. Because at the end of the day, I will still maintain that Royce O'Neal cannot be starting on this team. And if the option is to start Joe Ingles, you're probably not good enough to win the Western Conference. I know that you're a top three team right now. You're not as good as the Lakers, and we're going to talk about LeBron in a minute. The Lakers are 10-0 on the road.
Yeah.
They are, in my opinion, the Lakers are the best team in the NBA. I think the Clippers have finally figured it out. I think they're playing much better basketball. I think you're seeing upsets on a nightly basis. Don't ask me how Dame lost to OKC last night. No idea. That's a terrible loss.
Yeah, not good.
But all of this to say, the Western Conference is better and deeper, and I don't think the Jazz have improved, and I think they're the same team that lost in the bubble last year.
Yeah, well, and let's say that they have improved. I mean, they're still not as good as the Lakers. And the problem is, and this is really where the rubber meets the road if you're this Jazz squad, it's not good enough to just make the postseason anymore. It's not like, oh, yeah, we made the postseason, whoop-de-doo. Like, that's not good enough for this organization anymore. It's not good enough for Donovan Mitchell as a player on his own either. And so, you know, the expectation is that you will, I would say the expectation is you'll get to a Western Conference Finals. You know, that would, to me, that's the expectation at a minimum. And yeah, finals appearance would be, you know, what they want, of course. But they're not balanced enough. They don't, you can't rely on the three that much and then think that you're going to beat the Clippers, think that you're going to beat the Nuggets, think that you're certainly going to beat the Lakers, you know, because all three of those teams, have the ability to get to the basket. Two of them do it through big men, and the Clippers do it through just straight up talent and size, you know. So that's why I say if you're the team that's just constantly, you know, settling for threes, because that's really what it is. You don't build an offense to shoot threes. You don't do that. The reason they shoot so many threes, if you watch them on a nightly basis, is because they don't have an ability to get to the basket consistently unless it's Donovan playing one-on-one. So it's just not a great situation to be in. So then this three-point conversation takes us to the Rudy conversation, because as long as Rudy's on this team, you're not going to have a ton of money to mess around with this roster.
So we're back on the contract.
Well, but is it not a main point of this conversation?
Oh, like I don't think it's I don't think it's the biggest problem with this team. Mm-hmm. I think it's a problem for this team.
Right.
I think their financial flexibility has been taken away by that contract. And the fact that you're not going to be able to move it even if you wanted to, you know, for probably about a year from now,
mm-hmm.
I think that absolutely is an issue. And I think that this team, the Jazz are clearly very good. They're just not elite. They're not, in my opinion, they're not the Lakers or the Clippers.
What's
I know that.
Say? They're the Hall very good. They're
yeah,
not
I
the
mean,
Hall the best.
Are they the Denver Nuggets? That matchup has been very difficult for the Jazz. And granted, I don't trust Jamal Murray to be a leader of that team. But I also look at the way that they play team ball. I mean, they got a win last night after Jamal Murray got ejected for a flagrant two over one of the most overrated players in the NBA in Luka Doncic and his, oh my God, another triple-double. Put him in the Hall of Fame right now. He's better than Jordan. Anyway, point is, and Denver still found a way to get a win. Denver's a gritty, tough basketball team. The Jazz are not. I think that Rudy has trouble with Jokic. So anyway, here and there. I don't think I would not put them in the top three of the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Their record, I think, is stellar. I think they're shooting the ball historically well. You cannot rely on that.
No.
At the end of the day, that's what the biggest issue with the Jazz are. Like, I turned my attention to the Lakers from last night. I look at the way LeBron James is shooting the basketball right now. I look at the way that he took over that game. Now, he was extra motivated. It was in Cleveland. Some of the how shall I say, unwise members of the Cleveland Cavaliers staff were, you know, kind of chirping at him and talking a little bit of junk at LeBron. And so he decided to dominate that game. And what LeBron did there is show you he's still the guy that was in the bubble last year. He's still capable of being the best player in the world. And he absolutely torched the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, Jake. And I think in the process of doing that, he reestablished the Lakers as by far and clearly the best team in the NBA.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, with what LeBron's able to do still at this age, I mean, I think we can say there. I mean, there's not really a fall off in sight yet. I mean, the ability to play at this level is crazy at this age. And yeah, I think, you know, you take LeBron, then you combine that with AD. Then I look at Trez Harrell last night, absolutely being a force down low.
What a pickup that guy has been.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think he could get better than he was with the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely he has transformed the way that they use their bench.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way, you know, like JaVale McGee was in that role essentially last year.
Right.
Dwight Howard was in that role last year. They've got the best of both worlds because Trez can shoot a little bit of a jumper. He is a great rebounder, and he is a nasty spirit.
Yeah.
Down
low.
He wants
to play defense.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to get his nose dirty. Like, yeah. He doesn't care. And I think the other thing that he does really well, he runs the break, and the Lakers, his teammates clearly trust him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Montrezl Harrell has been arguably the signing of the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, he's been sensational. And I think, you know, every great championship caliber team needs a guy like Montrezl Harrell who, yeah, like you said, wants to get his nose dirty, wants to play the gritty style of basketball because, you know, again, you look at, you know, he's essentially their Dennis Rodman, if you will. You know, he plays that role and he does a damn good job at it. And I think overall, yeah, it's to me in the league in the big picture, the Lakers are on their own level, and then it's basically everybody else because every other team that you want to look at, whether it be the Clippers, they don't have a big man, right? They got to rely on shooting and in the mid range game to win games. So that's their weakness, which
yes,
the Lakers can exploit greatly. I look at the Nuggets. The Nuggets are simply just not as talented as the Lakers are across their roster. So the Lakers end up winning a lot of matchups. And when I look at AD versus Jokic, AD's going to dominate that every time because of his athleticism.
Where are you at with Golden State? Because I think this Wiseman situation is an interesting call. You know, to put him back on the bench, I think it very clearly limits his impact on the game.
Right.
Rebounding wise,
mm-hmm.
But they felt like he was in a little bit over his head. They move him back to the bench, and it doesn't really impact them.
Right. That's what they've always been, though. I mean, the Warriors have always been a team that's been able to play relatively small and have success. I mean, again, before Durant got there, they won a title with, you know, Curry, Clay, and Draymond as their center. So clearly they understand how to play small, but I think Wiseman is their future, and I'm a big advocate for making rookies earn their time on the court. Number one, when they're young
here
in the
we
league.
Go.
But number two, I think he is over his head. I think he doesn't understand quite yet fully how to play with Steph. He doesn't understand when to let Steph play one on one and when to set screens for Steph. And there's a very
well. And he had been wandering on defense.
Yeah.
He had been wandering on defense, and I think it was as simple as that. Just I'm curious how he rebounds from this. I mean, you know, Kevon Looney's a guy that's not going to be a 40-minute a night guy. I think he played 19 minutes last night.
But he's trustworthy, and he's in the right spot, and he
yeah.
does what you need him to do.
But Wiseman now is only playing 16 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't – with practice time shrinking, I mean, you just don't get very much practice time in this league anymore. I think it's very difficult to develop a player, and I say the same thing about LaMelo Ball. It is very difficult to develop a player when you're not starting. Like I look at James Wiseman, and I think he could absolutely develop much, much more quickly playing 25, 30 minutes a night. Now, I'm not an NBA coach or a general manager. They clearly saw something there that they felt like they needed to put him back on the bench, and they did. By the way, they're playing much better basketball of late. And mm-hmm. a lot of that is tied to Steph Curry just being a firework. The guy goes off on a nightly basis here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And they're very difficult to stop. All of this before we get to, you know, benching and starting rookies. I look at the teams that are currently qualified in the Western Conference to make the playoffs, I look at the Phoenix Suns. That's a really difficult team to match up with.
Yep.
I mean, that is, I would not want to see them in a seven-game series.
No, they're the team that can knock you out in the first round when you're playing them.
No question about that. And I think it's really interesting to see the impact that Chris Paul has had on that team. I wonder where the Jazz are. I mean, if you look at their numbers, the Jazz are scoring 113 points a game. They're giving up 106.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice spread, right? The Lakers lead the league in point differential. They're plus 10, essentially. So the Jazz are putting up these numbers that make it look good. My question is this sustainable? And I just don't know, out of this particular group, how is this sustainable?
Yeah, look, I mean, all you have to look at is their postseason performances the last, you know, couple of years. I mean, I can remember, three, 4 years ago, us talking on this show about how they were battling to be a 5 seed, and now they're battling to be a 3 seed. Well, what's really changed? I mean, really think about this. What really changes between you being a 5 seed and you being a 3 seed in the postseason? At the end of the day, you're still going to go out and have to beat a team 4 times to move on. You know, and they're not able to do that at the highest level. They're not.
Yeah, and I think when you look at some of the numbers, I mean, the Jazz are number 3 in attempts this year. They shoot 41.5 threes a game. Number 2 in percentage, they're making 40% of their threes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a massive number. I mean, to be making 40% of your threes, and when you put that together, they're making 16.8 three-pointers a game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
It's a great number, but listen.
But my point is, you're not gonna win with that.
What's going to happen when they're in the postseason, their legs are tired because they've been playing all season, and they shoot 20% from three in a seven-game series? What's going
to
happen?
Well, they're going to rely on Rudy Gobert to play with his back to the basket. And
Donovan's going to cut, right? And Rudy's going to be able to pass it to him? Oh, that's right. Rudy doesn't do that.
You're a hater.
I am a hater. That contract is garbage, dude. It's limiting them. It's keeping them from winning a championship. And frankly, the way the team is set up, they're not set up to beat the best teams in the West, which unfortunately, they play in the West, not the East. So they got to go through those teams to get to where they want to go.
Well, they've got some. Look, they're playing great basketball right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as simple as that. You know, they get a Knicks team tonight, followed by back to backs with Dallas. All three of those are at home, and then they go to Denver. I mean, I don't happen to love the way the Dallas Mavericks play basketball.
No,
I happen to think that they're way too heavily reliant on Luka doing these incredible things. Where are you at with him? Like, I have a lot of respect for his game,
mm-hmm.
but I do not enjoy. He's not a guy that I'm like, oh, Luka's on TV, I got to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely plays an entitled brand of basketball, for sure. I think because his path has been different, meaning that he didn't come to the league out of college. He came to the league from Europe, obviously, after winning championships there and doing a bunch of great things. Yeah, I mean, he's a nice player, but like, I'm not sitting here saying, man, Luka's on TV, you know, I better watch, or it's Luka and whoever in a 7-game series, I better be all over that series. I'm not doing that the way I'm doing it with LeBron or Durant or even Steph on a bad Warriors team. You know, those guys are the guys that I resonate with. And I think most of the league resonates with, but to put a bow around this Jazz thing, like, you know, yeah, they're playing great basketball. Yeah, they are a really good team. But as a Jazz fan, can you honestly sit here and tell me that it's good enough for them to just be a good team? Is it good enough for them to just play, you know, 600 basketball, get to the postseason, and then lose the third series or the second series?
Are they a championship contender? Are the Utah Jazz a team that's going to compete for an NBA championship? Are they a team we should expect to see in the Western Conference Finals?
I don't think so, but I think they're a two-round team. I don't think they get to the Western Conference Finals.
And I think they're so far to go. Like,
yeah.
We're just in the last week of January.
Yeah, there's a long way to go.
You know, I mean, we're talking about an all-star game in March. You know, like we're not even at Valentine's Day. We're not at a trade deadline. Like, yep, there is so much basketball to be played. But having said that, with the dismantling of the Houston Rockets, there are very clearly far fewer potholes in this conference.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma City's not very good.
Nope.
You look at,
except if they're playing Portland. Don't forget
that. Okay. I look at again, and I hate saying it about the Warriors because I love, like, that's a team that's average that's really fun to watch.
They are, yeah.
They're not a championship contender right now.
Mm-mm. And they know that, and that's the thing. This is the discussion. The Warriors know. They have the ability to say, hey, we know that we're not going to compete for a championship this year, but we also know that we may be good enough, just barely good enough to scrape into the postseason. That's going to be our goal this year, just to scrape in. If we scrape into the postseason, it's been a hell of a year. Steph had an awesome year. Like, you know, Wiseman developed nicely for us. You know, we got something out of a year when we were never going to compete for a championship. You know, so like they have the ability, and this is something you always say, they understand where they are and where they want to go. You know, they understand, yes, their deficiencies. They understand who they are as a basketball team. I cannot confidently say that the front office, the new ownership in the front office of this Jazz squad, understands where they want to go. They may have a set goal, right? They may be saying to themselves, hey, we want to get to the NBA Finals. That's our set goal. But can you honestly say they know where they are if they're signing Rudy to that level of a contract, or they're not moving certain guys, or they're not doing
things? I think they know where they are. The question is, do they know how to get to where they want to go? That's the biggest question.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think there is always a fine line between placating your fan base and winning basketball games. And I think in a market like here in Salt Lake City, your fan base is really important to you. They need to buy your merch. They need to buy tickets. They need to show up. They need to watch games on TV and listen on the radio. And
mm-hmm.
I think there was a point, in fact, I know there was a point, where they were trying to trade Rudy Gobert. And I think pretty much everything stopped once they got serious about this sale. And I think, I think there is some shell-shocked. Like, from the Gordon Hayward situation, I think there was a little tread lightly with Rudy Gobert. That's something that's been talked about a lot.
You really think so?
Yeah, I think that would... Well, I don't think so. It's, people have asked me about it around the NBA. I know quite a few people around the NBA, and a lot of people wondered if losing Gordon Hayward the way they lost Gordon Hayward played a role in the way that they signed Rudy Gobert and the way they went about that. And I think it's absolutely the truth. I think they feel like Gordon Hayward stomped on their balls and they were not going to let that happen again. And,
well, that fact is, that is what happened.
That is what happened.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's on Gordon. I don't think he was honest. You know,
no,
the,
I'm
the
saying
unintentional.
That's what happened with Gobert. That Gobert stomped on their balls because they offered him a contract.
Yes.
He said, no, I want this much. And they ended up paying him anyway. And my point just is, hey, great, I understand that that is what happened with Gordon. You made a mistake with Gordon. You should have never let him get to the open market as, what was he, a restricted free agent? So you,
and
you,
then, well, but then you got to remember, like, the. that like blog post that unaccidentally was published, and
yeah,
well, I made a decision.
Fire. Yeah.
Like, that whole thing, I think, embarrassed the Jazz quite a bit.
Well, it is. It is embarrassing. There's no question about it. They handled
it
poorly.
So my point is, I think that there was a little shell shock there. And I think that the Jazz were not willing to let him go because, again, one of the other things, and I hate getting into this, but I think it's an important conversation when we're talking about the Jazz.
Yep.
I don't believe that the Jazz front office and ownership believes that they're going to be able to recruit high-level, top-line players here.
I completely agree.
I think they don't believe that.
Yeah.
So I think they're willing to overpay a guy like Rudy Gobert to keep him, even though he is incredibly limiting to them in crucial situations and stretches during the season.
Right.
You cannot rely on Rudy offensively in the last 5 minutes, 5-7 minutes of a game.
Right.
Now, is he going to be a rim wrecker defensively? Yes. He's going to block shots, cause turnovers. He's going to force teams to take long shots. But what we're seeing more and more is that teams are working around that and teams are pulling him away from the basket. All of that to say, I think the Jazz were more willing to sign him because they don't believe that they could get a replacement for him.
Which is, unfortunate. I think I would agree that, you know, the ultra superstar player is not coming to the Utah Jazz. But I also agree that that does not mean, and that's not an excuse to not be a successful team. I mean, you look at what OKC was for a while, right? They got CP3. I mean, yeah. He's a high level player. You can go and look at, you know, other, you know, average teams, and they are able to do some decent things, you know. But the Jazz, yeah, maybe it is a, you know, again, maybe it is a mindset thing with the front office where they just aren't going after these higher level, you know, players. They're not having the conversations with other organizations.
Oh, I think they're trying. I think the Jazz wanted to be involved in the James Harden trade, whether as a primary or a secondary.
Example. Yeah.
You know, like, I think they wanted to be involved. This is the Phoenix Suns. The Suns
but
are
it's
always
changed now too.
Yeah, but the Suns, how did the Suns change it? They went and got Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They committed to spending more money, getting a new arena, building a new practice facility. Like, they took themselves out of the doldrums. Now, they still have arguably the worst owner in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
But the point is, they changed, and I hate the term, well, they changed our culture. No, they didn't. They spent money and built a new building and a new facility. That's why their fortunes have changed quite a bit.
Right.
But my point is, this goes back to the Donovan Mitchell, Shaquille O'Neal, is Donovan Mitchell a superstar conversation?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you're convinced that you're not going to get superstars to come to Salt Lake City, can you rely on Donovan Mitchell to make a B player and a B-plus player? Or bring up, because Royce O'Neal is who he is. He's never going to improve. This is who Royce O'Neal, this is who Joe Ingles, this is who Mike Conley, this is who Rudy Gobert. They are going to be these guys. You know who they are. You know who they're going to be.
And you know who they're not.
And here we are. The only guy that's going to, you know, that's going to raise the tide, and, you know, a rising tide raises all ships, is Donovan Mitchell.
Right.
And until you get a legitimate number two scorer, and it's not Jordan Clarkson, with all due respect.
Yeah.
Until you get a number two scorer, this team's fortunes are not going to change.
Yeah.
It is that simple.
You know, while you were talking, I was trying to sit here and think about, you know, players that could really make an impact but aren't like superstar caliber players. I look at a guy like, I look at the Zach LaVines of the world. I look at the Aaron Gordons of the world. I look at that, like, that caliber of player. That's the kind of caliber of player you need to help Donovan. Like, Zach LaVine on the wing, with Mike Conley at the point and Donovan on the other wing, would be a nice, you know, setup. So my point is yeah, you're not going to get James Harden. You're not getting KD. You're not getting Kyrie. You're not getting LeBron. You're not getting Giannis. You're not getting that cut of player. That does not mean that you can't put a team together that is capable of winning an NBA championship.
But should you not be in the market for Bradley Beal?
Yeah,
should you
perfect example.
Right? Like, there are guys in the East that are going to get traded, because I think everybody pretty much anticipates Milwaukee and Brooklyn are going to be the last two teams standing in the East.
Right.
Bradley Beal's a guy that, by all accounts, is sitting out there ready to go.
Yeah.
If you look at the Houston Rockets, they went and got John Wall. What would the Utah Jazz be like with John Wall? Go get an impact player.
Yes.
That can make a difference. Take out Royce O'Neal, plug in Bradley Beal, and what is this team like?
Western Conference Finals winner.
That's, I mean, it, it's
because, like, then what happens? Then you've got a dominant scorer in Bradley Beal.
He
won't put up 40 when he's playing next to Donovan, but he'll give you 30. He'll give you 25 to 30, 10 boards, couple of assists.
Yes.
He's a playmaker. And by the way, he's a guy that you can play, and I don't know how many people listening have watched a lot of Nets basketball, but the Nets have the problem where they've got three superstars, so they rotate these guys in and out. So my point is for the Jazz, if they were to get Bradley Beal, they would have then the ability to, you know, rest Donovan a little more, play Bradley Beal, like, and your scoring wouldn't fall off the same way it does, because that's the other issue here. Your bench is not great either, you know, so you don't have a lot of depth. You don't have the only really difference-making guy is Donovan Mitchell right now. So
yeah.
I love the idea of Bradley Beal. I think that'd be great.
That's the kind of move they have to make. If you are truly sure that you are not going to be able to sign a superstar in free agency, go trade for one. Because it really is the only way that business gets done at that level in the NBA. And, you know, if you make a three-team deal, I mean, again, Who are you willing to give up? I guess that's a different show, but...
Well, I think the concept of who you're willing to give up is just simply based in what you're trying to do. So it's, as a front office, is your goal in calling teams to make trades and put something together, are you trying to get a wing scorer like Bradley Beal? Are you trying to get, I don't even really know how to describe it other than to just say a little bit lower cut of a player, but somebody who can make an impact. So again, like an Aaron Gordon or a Zach LaVine, let's say, that level of player. What are you trying to do? And based on what you're trying to do, that should dictate what you're willing to give up. And I think, again, this is why for me personally, the Gobert thing is so frustrating to me, that contract, because of what it does to your ability to make moves and bro, edit this roster.
He's guaranteed $205 million after this season.
That's what I'm saying. Literally, two players are taking up 60% of your cap. So the difference is the Lakers have that situation. The difference is they have LeBron James, one of the best players the game's ever seen, right? No shade to Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert, but they're not LeBron. You know what I mean?
I would trade Mike Conley in a second.
I would too. Yep.
I mean, he's got a number at $34 million.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he's signed past this year, but he's got a number in $34 million that is a very tradable number.
Yep.
I look at some of their other numbers and like, if I could get a Bradley Beal, are you going to trade a Bogdanovich?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You would.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Wouldn't even second guess it because the difference is.
But wait, then you would have two Bogdanoviches on the, well.
Take it easy.
Anyway.
Take it easy.
In the same conference. Yeah. Anyway.
No, but my point is the reason I wouldn't second guess making that deal is because again, Bogdanovich is not a guy who goes and gets his off the dribble or can create. He needs somebody to feed him for the most part. And so, again, the Jazz needs somebody who can create other than Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Make sure you follow us on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Hit subscribe. Put a thumbs up on all of our videos. Every day on YouTube, you get a live stream and you get two or three other highlights from the show or the major conversations we had. For instance, today, we will be talking about the Jimmer. So you'll get a Jimmer Fredette video today. That's why you want to hit subscribe. Let's talk about Jimmer. Because I understand that the Jimmer is one of the greatest and arguably the greatest athlete who's ever played in the state of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what he did at BYU, if you look at the sensation that he was at BYU, if you look at just the ability of somebody to put out the word that Jimmer Fredette is coming back to Provo for an appearance, which was a complete hoax, and the entire world showed up, that tells you the star power and the ability that Jimmer Fredette has.
Yes.
I know a lot about Jimmer Fredette. But you know the thing that I know most? He's not good enough to play in the NBA.
Oh, shit.
I know. There's going to be Jimmer tears. I get it. Jimmer is not an NBA player. And with all due respect to what he is as a player in China and what he was as a BYU baller, like, he's a really talented basketball player. And it's not knocking him or taking anything away from his game to say he's not an NBA player. And I only point to the Utah Jazz to prove this. We just spent a bunch of time talking about how the Jazz live and die on the three ball. They shoot 40% from three. They shoot 46 threes a game. Do you think if Jimmer could make threes in the NBA that he'd be in the league? A league that is reliant on three-pointers. Don't you think if somebody believed that Jimmer Fredette could make a three consistently in the NBA, he'd be in the NBA right now?
Yeah.
Tell me that he isn't the same guy as a Kyle Korver.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know what the difference is? Kyle Korver is a much larger physical player.
Yeah.
Right? I look at J.J. Redick. Those are two
very similar
bodies, right? J.J. Redick knocks it down in the NBA. Jimmer Fredette did not. And I think it is as clearly as I can state it. There, and I should set this up. Jimmer scored 70 in China the other day, as he is known to do. He dominates that league. So all of a sudden, of course, the thirsty BYU media, with all due respect, the guys like, and it was Ben Criddle on Twitter. Should Jimmer try to make another run at the NBA?
Sometimes I think I just say shit. Sample what comes out of my mouth.
No, Ben. He should not make a run at the NBA. Because we've already seen that.
I want it.
Right? Like, but seriously, there is a thirst for the Jimmer. Oh, he's got to play in the NBA. If he wasn't Mormon, he'd have an NBA contract right now.
Wet like I'm booked.
No, it has nothing to do with him being Mormon. Wow, I'm here biased against him because he's a short white guy who played at BYU. Go.
So I said, yeah.
There's no bias against Jimmer Fredette in the NBA. Oh, well, Devin Booker was jealous because there was somebody on the team who was better than he was at shooting threes, so he ran his ass out of the desert. No, it's not what happened. Jimmer A, struggles defensively because of his size. He is not, it's not even his size. It is his build and his mentality. He's not a dirty dog at that size.
Mm-hmm.
And to play in this league, you have to be a dirty dog at that size.
Are we clear on that?
Right? You have to get after that ass defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always struggled to be a physical defender. He's always struggled to get through screens. This is a screen and three league, right? Like,
yes.
High pick and rolls, lead to three balls, like, Jimmer has always struggled to defend that.
It's a league where the point guard's always compromised because of how much screening goes on. So
yes.
To get through that and fight through that and give the other four guys on the floor a chance, you've got to be physical on defense. And Jimmer is, you know, a lot of time we hear the term soft Euro. Jimmer's not even a soft Euro. He's
no.
Just simply too small to get the job done, which is unfortunate because he is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fun player to watch. And if you have not gone to YouTube and hit the subscribe button on the Monty Show and then immediately gone and searched for Jimmer Fredette highlights in China, you're missing out.
Yep.
I mean, he legit, on a regular basis, drops 30 points a night.
Yeah.
And the way he does it, though, is terrible defense. They don't play tight, close defense on him.
Yeah, 30 in Shanghai is probably 10 in the league.
Yeah, like... And I'm not saying that he couldn't score, but I look at his NBA career. He just never was able. He averaged 6 points a game over his career.
And by the way, the thing no one's talking about is he did get his chance. He came back with the Kings and still flamed out. So, you know, just saying.
I mean, it just is one of those things where when you only average 2.2 three-pointers a game, you're
for a guy who all that,
that's what he does.
That's what you do.
Like, right?
You have to do better than
and
that.
And we were rooting for him hard in Phoenix.
Yeah.
We had him on the show.
Yeah.
Like, nobody rooted for Jimmer Fredette more than we did.
Yeah.
He's just not an NBA player, and there's nothing wrong with saying that. It's that emotional component that we as sports fans are never able to get over.
Yeah. Yep.
Where, oh, but it's Jimmer. At Church Ball Jimmer, man. Well, he should be in the NBA.
You are what you are.
Because I want to buy his jersey. No, he shouldn't be in the NBA because he hasn't proven the ability to be there. Like, I look at his NBA numbers. I mean, he averaged 13 minutes a game. 13 minutes a game. If he was making threes, trust me, he would have played more than that.
Are people miring?
No, not in the NBA they weren't. And the guy shot, by the way, the guy shot 40. What did he shoot from three? He shot 37% from three in the NBA.
Mm.
Middle of the road.
Yeah.
He was not a spectacular shooter here. And so I think you have to realize that Jimmer is a really talented basketball player.
Do you think that, you know, Utah sports fans, like, you know, fans of the Jazz or any other team that is here, BYU certainly, Utah obviously, fans of Utah sports, do you think that the only reason that they're so thirsty for a Jimmer return to the NBA is because they don't really have a figure here, a sports figure? Because you really don't have one. I mean, that's why I feel like as fun as the BYU football team was this year, I feel like part of the reason it was such a, you know, smashing hit in this market is because there isn't a Devin Booker in Phoenix, or whatever guy you want to point to in some of these other But that's my question: does Donovan have that like star power even in his own state? I don't know. Like sometimes I wonder, because the Jimmer thing is just such a you're literally like casting a rope like 50 years back in time for the Jimmer stuff. Like it's so old to me. And yet people still are thirsty on it.
Dude, he was a spectacular player at BYU.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, how long are fans here going to hold on to that? I'm not saying that they should just write the guy off, but the idea that because he put up 70 in Shanghai, they're like, oh, well, he's got to come back to the league. No, that tells me there's not enough here.
Well, and I think you have to look at things like his Greek league play. Like, I mean, he averaged 13 points in Greece, which is a very physical league.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at his overseas numbers, Jimmer's a 420 shooter from three overseas. So he is precipitously in decline in the NBA. Anyway, to your point about superstars, I think there's a couple of things about the state of Utah that a lot of people recognize, and I think we have to recognize. This is a football state.
Yeah.
And I think the NBA will always be second here. It is why Taysom Hill is a massive rock star here. It's why Kyle Van Noy, is a rock star here. You look at the fact that, how excited were Utah fans, two seasons ago when they were on the verge?
Yeah.
If you look at some of the storylines that have gone on in this state since Utah got into the Pac-12, and you realize the level of passion that is built into football in this state. You realize that, guys like, Travis Wilson was huge here. People will live and die with Travis Wilson was a great quarterback. He was so much better than Taysom. Like the Travis Wilson versus Taysom Hill conversations were epic, because that's what people here are passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah.
We love our football in Utah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right? So when you get a breakout star like a Jimma, he really is a star.
Yeah.
And I think that's why so many people like to hang on to Jimmer, because he was a breakout star from BYU, which does not very often happen. Like Jamal Williams with the Packers. I mean, he's one of the most successful players to come out of this state in a decade.
Mm-hmm.
If you really think about it, obviously Kyle Van Noy has won multiple Super Bowls.
Right. But he's not a quarterback. He's a linebacker. So
right.
It's less powerful.
But yeah, so I look at Jamal and I say, okay, well, he's a running back with the Green Bay Packers, and he's had a huge influence on that team.
Yeah.
I look at Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill is, I don't know, is Taysom a quarterback anymore? Probably not. But he's a guy that found a home, and the right home, and Sean Payton has used him, and he's been very effective.
Right.
When you're a star coming out of BYU and you make it to a league, you're going to be a huge name here. And unfortunately, not many of them come back. Here's something from the past.
Oh, boy.
Do you remember when we did Man Camp?
Yes.
And, we had John Beck and Johnny Harleen. We still have I have the hat right behind me from John Beck and Johnny Harleen that they signed for us. I have an autographed John Beck football. Those two guys were a huge name, mainly because they live in folklore in the rivalry.
Right.
But, you bring all those guys back together. And it was amazing to see how much the fans poured love and adulation on those guys.
Yeah.
It was watching it, and for those of you who don't remember, Man Camp was something we did at K-Fan. And it was this huge event, out at the Legacy Event Center.
Let's go.
Right? Way out in, North Valley.
Yeah.
On a freezing cold Saturday.
Yeah.
It was cold ass.
Yeah.
BYU that Saturday was playing, anybody? At Notre Dame. And we all watched BYU get stomped by Notre Dame. And then the event ended. But it was so much fun hanging out with those guys. Right? And it just was, it reminded you how much fans love their athletes in Utah. So I don't know. You know, having worked in Los Angeles, I can tell you that it is working around the Lakers. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, Chick Hearn, you think about it. Michael Cooper. I watched Michael Cooper get mobbed at the Staples Center. You know, like, Orlando Woolridge, who was the head coach of the Sparks at one point.
What a name that is.
Yeah, getting mobbed. Like, I mean, L.A. with the Lakers is very similar.
But L.A. is just such a different place.
Yeah, because they don't give a damn about most pro sports in L.A.
No.
Right? Like, the Dodgers... you know, Tommy Lasorda passing away has reminded us of that. Today, by the way, today's the 1 year anniversary of Kobe's helicopter crash.
Yeah.
He is that guy.
He is.
He is that guy. I think Irvin Magic Johnson is that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, but yeah, there's not a USC love like that.
No. No, oh, they're not good.
Carson Palmer's coming back to L.A. Nobody cares.
Porter Gustin.
Who cares? yeah. Porter Gustin, who should have gone to BYU. Like, Porter Gustin is the perfect example in Utah. The kid from Salem playing for the Browns in the playoffs. People are tweeting about him. Like, well, that's a. So they were so pissed at Bronco that Porter Gustin didn't wind up at BYU. And then they got pissed he went to USC. And they're like, oh, forget all that. That's a Utah boy right there playing for the Browns, right? Like, that's what football means in this state.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, anyway, good old Bronco. Pouring a bucket of water over my head. Will Smith and I go down to Utah County. We go down to the BYU campus. Bronco autographed the bucket of water he poured over our head. I still have the Home Depot bucket. You know, I mean.
Memories, dude.
Those were the days.
Good old days, man.
Those were the days. I don't know. Anyway, we'll bring Donovan back up at some point.
Yeah, he'll find a way to make the show again.
Probably tomorrow, you know. I mean, they play the Knicks tonight. Make sure you find us on YouTube. Make sure you hit the subscribe button on YouTube. Search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. A couple of shotgun topics here. LaMelo Ball not starting again for the Charlotte Hornets. And now it's at the point where in Charlotte, they're out here talking about how he is not a wanting defender and how he is not a passionate, smart rebounder.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, should LaMelo Ball be starting for the Charlotte Hornets? Or, I'm sorry, should LaMelo Ball be starting for Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I think at this point he probably should be. I think the idea that you would say that he's not a willing rebounder when he's putting up 10 rebounds a night most nights is a little surprising. The defensive portion is where I think there's some real credence, though. I think, you know, we were watching, what was that? I think that was Sunday, maybe, or Saturday.
Yeah, I watched most of their game last night against the Magic.
Yeah, so, like, I didn't watch that last night, but over the weekend we were watching a game where he got lost on defense many times.
Well, here's the problem, and I think this is a really important part of this discussion. They play this ridiculous zone defense,
mm-hmm.
and they're all running around with their heads cut off. Like, I don't know why Borrego is playing this way. James Borrego, the head coach of the Hornets,
yeah.
I don't know why they're running this zone defense where they – I mean, they're literally sprinting from the top of the key to the corner to try and, you know, get their hand up on a three ball. I just don't understand why they're doing that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think a lot of teams, like, the LeBron's playing the Cavs last night, and the Cavs broke out a zone a couple of times. You know, I look at the Nets.
And how did he do?
Yeah, I mean,
he dropped 46 on him.
Yeah, I mean, he did well. But, again, he's one of the greatest players of all time, arguably the greatest player of all time. I look at the Nets last night in, you know, who do they play? I'm totally spacing on who the Nets played last night. Who was that?
The Nets of Brooklyn played Miami.
Miami. So Miami breaks out a zone probably, I would say, like 5-6 times in that game. The difference is Eric Spoelstra has them really dialed in on the zone, so they know how to play
it. But do people understand what the point of a zone is? The point of a zone is to keep the paint clean
mm-hmm.
and force teams to shoot threes.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that against Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because I think the Brooklyn Nets are not going to settle for threes. They're not based in three-point shooting right now. They're based in trying to get really good looks for the individual players. So, like, for Durant, he's going to shoot threes, of course, but
yeah.
But, like, for Durant,
they shot 29% from three, so maybe you're right.
Yeah, I mean, for Durant, he's a mid-range player. That's his bread and
butter. 3 of 12 from three last night.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play well last night, you know? I mean, they win the game, you know?
But, and well, just real quick on mm-hmm. this. Kyrie Irving took 17 shots.
You mean he laid 17 bricks?
and he only scored 16 points.
Douche.
Like, the I'm telling you, it's an awkward
fit. I'm so tired of him, bro.
Anyway, I think LaMelo's problem defensively is that he doesn't get to go head-to-head with Anthony. He doesn't get to go head-to-head with these other guys, these other point guards. So we don't know what he's like in man defense because he never plays man defense.
Yeah.
I mean, he is winding up in situations like he was guarding, you know, just their bigs last night. Like, I just don't understand what the point of this is, because LaMelo Ball right now is averaging 11 points a game, 6.5 rebounds a game, 6 dimes, a steal and a half a game, and he's turning it over 2.5 times a game, which leads that team. He's also a point guard. He's on the ball almost every trip.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers aren't terrible.
No, they're not. And by the way, the other thing that's not going to be on the stat sheet is the intangibles he brings to the game, which is all the energy he has, the pace of play he brings, all those awesome things that are honestly difference-making. So, I don't know.
31% from three, though.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he got off to a fast start shooting the three, and obviously, like I told you, and I think you even said this, I mean, the league comes back around to you as you shoot in volume, your numbers will level out. So, you know, I think he should be starting. I think, you know, we were talking about Wiseman earlier in the show. LaMelo Ball needs more reps than Wiseman needs because he's going to be on the ball. He's going to be in a leadership role on that team. So, yeah, he needs to play more. But I also think that you have to balance, you know, his need for reps and development with making sure that he keeps a level head and doesn't get too big about himself. Now, he's not typically been that player, so I don't think it'll be a big issue, but that's always a consideration.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what's interesting is that I think he's moving. I think he's moving in the right direction. I don't think there's any question they're going to be forced to start him. I don't see how you go the entire season playing him, you know, 26 minutes a night or whatever it is he's playing right now, 24 minutes a night.
Well, he's already pushing you to start him. So by the end of the season, he'll be starting.
You would think so. Yeah. And then there's this situation with Costco. How about this? Before we get to Apple, because I do want to talk about iPhones. This situation with Costco is bizarre. So we were looking for a product that we buy regularly at Costco. It's toasted coconut. It comes in a Ziploc bag, and it's wonderful. Like, you can put it on smoothies. I put it in my oats. I love that stuff. But all of a sudden, it just disappeared. Like, it was just gone. Bye-bye. And we couldn't figure out why. Couldn't find it on Amazon. Couldn't find it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So then yesterday night, you send me a story about monkey slave labor in Thailand picking coconuts.
Mm-hmm.
This is legitimately monkeys, like the animal, a monkey.
Like an ape, yeah.
Being forced into slave labor in a zoo setting so that they pick hundreds of coconuts a day per monkey. And how this works is, and it's incredibly bizarre.
First of all, I just want to say, I've never heard of this before last night.
But this is a true story.
Yeah.
This is 100% a true story. So in Thailand, what they do is, they have these coconut trees, and they put them in, for lack of a better word, a zoo. And they keep these monkeys, these smaller monkeys, on chains with a collar, and they make them climb the trees, harvest the coconuts, bring them down, climb another tree, harvest the coconuts, bring them down. Those monkeys work all day long. And then they take them off the leash and let them run around the zoo, right?
No.
No. What they do is they keep them in chains, they stuff them into cages, and PETA has video of it. The cage is so small that the monkey can barely move. Like, it literally is enough just for his body, and if he happens to want to roll over in his sleep, he can. Other than that, no. That's all this monkey gets to do. So essentially, this monkey's life is living with a metal shackle around his neck, climbing trees to harvest coconut, so that the owners of the coconut can make the products that they make with it.
Without paying employees.
Without paying anybody to climb those trees to get the coconuts. And they're making money on people watching the monkeys climb the trees to get the coconut.
Mm-hmm.
So PETA went to Costco, amongst others, and said, hey, this is what's happening. We want you to pull all those products. So Costco has now stopped buying and selling coconut products from Thailand, period. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yep, and Target's on that list too. They pulled the product as well.
So let me ask you this. Do you care about this? Do you care about how your toasted coconut winds up in your oats?
Yeah, I definitely care. I think the thing for me is I'm admittedly not going to do research on every single product and see where it came from.
Right.
I mean, that's just not who I am. But at the same time, you know, when it gets out that they're doing this, yeah, I'm not going to give them money. I mean, I think number one, obviously the animal cruelty is ridiculous. I think it's absolutely trash that they're doing that to those animals, because it's just number one. I mean, it's wrong for so many reasons. I mean, it's not even just the fact that you're essentially treating these monkeys like slaves, number one. But then number two, the integrity of the whole thing is awful. I mean, you don't want to pay people, which in turn is going to hurt your local economy, which means that you're not going to push forward at all in your local market. It's terrible, man. It's absolutely terrible. And I'm so glad that we're not sitting here having to have a conversation about how Costco or Target or any of these other companies didn't pull the product, you know, because that really would be disappointing.
Yep, I would agree with that. By the way, breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Mel Kiper has dropped his first mock draft big board.
Get a fast pass for Douche Mountain, because you're a douche.
It's Mel Kiper.
Right.
He's not a douche.
Mm-hmm.
It's Mel Kiper's big board.
Yeah, okay.
Throbbing. Here, and note the names, because Zach Wilson's on this list.
Guaranteed Zach Wilson's not top two on his list.
Mel Kiper's big board. At number one, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Zach Wilson, quarterback. No, I lied. Trevor Wilson, quarterback out of or Trevor Lawrence. I said
hello.
Trevor.
Hello.
Trevor Lawrence, number one, according to Mel Kiper's big board.
Mm-hmm.
Jacksonville Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence, quarterback out of Clemson.
Right.
Number two, the New York Jets on Mel Kiper's big board.
Won't be there because they're going to get Deshaun Watson.
Devontae Smith, wide receiver, Alabama. Roll Tide. Number three on Mel Kiper's big board, the Miami Dolphins. They're not taking a quarterback because they're going to get Deshaun Watson. So they're taking Ja'Marr Chase, wide receiver, LSU. Number four on Mel Kiper's big board. I don't know what voice I'm using.
I love it.
Mel Kiper's big board. The Atlanta Falcons select Zach Wilson, quarterback out of BYU, the Cougars.
All gas, no break.
Go Cougs. I'll stop. I should stop smoking crack in my sleep. It's because my wife makes me take CBD at night. So I get high right before I go to bed because I take the CBD, like, you know, we smoke J's and everything.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
CBD is actually not weed, Jake, just so you know, your dad's not a pothead. And number five, the Cincinnati Bengals select some offensive tackle from some school I hate in Oregon that uses ducks as their thing on Mel Kiper's big board.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. That was a wonderful update.
You're welcome. Do I want to look and see who the Chicago Bears pick? I probably don't. The Niners take Patrick Surtain the second from the corner out of Alabama.
Roll Tide.
The LA Chargers are going Christian Darrisaw, the offensive tackle out of Virginia Tech. That
smart.
Makes a lot of sense.
Smart.
Patriots take Mac Jones, the quarterback out of
very smart
Alabama.
Roll Tide.
Cardinals take Caleb Farley, the corner out of Virginia Tech.
All right, moving on. Okay.
Man, like the Chicago Bears are taking Tevin Jenkins, offensive tackle out of Oklahoma State on Mel Kiper's big board. These are never going to happen, by the way.
Yeah.
I think the Jags are going to trade out and get Deshaun Watson or try to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the New England Patriots are going to do everything they can do to get Zach Wilson, the quarterback from BYU.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here in 6 minutes, can we rip Apple for a minute? Are you?
I'll try to stay calm and not curse.
Good luck. Fuck Apple. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so I'm a huge Apple guy. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 Apple devices right here in my sphere of
excellence. 5, 6.
Yeah.
There's, you know,
6, 7 if you count my wife, who actually is a Apple hater. She has an iPhone for her work. So there are seven Apple devices in my sphere of influence. So Apple in November, we told you on this show, settled a massive lawsuit, over $100 million lawsuit, which to them really is, you know,
drops in the
bucket, toilet paper money.
Yeah.
For throttling iPhones.
Throttling.
Throttling on Mel Kiper's big board. Okay, I'll stop. Throttling iPhones, which means the old iPhones all of a sudden take a dump.
Doesn't make you feel responsible.
Oh, hey, thank God there's a brand new iPhone out. I can replace this piece of shit. That's Apple's plan. Apple has essentially acknowledged that they tear down your old iPhone. Hey, man, like it just turns off and the battery lasts 3 minutes.
Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
The girl doesn't even get off the casting couch.
Like, stop.
Her stepbrother doesn't even walk into the room yet before the phone goes dead. Anyway, that's a porn reference.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah, I know, you know.
Right, I get it. Yeah, there's great.
You watch Baker highlights.
We get it.
You don't watch casting couch. Admit that you... Never mind. No, I'm not. I don't want to know.
No!
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, where are we talking about? Oh, our sphere of influence on Mel Kiper's big board.
Throttling.
iPhones. They paid a huge settlement in November to 30 states across this great U.S. of A. For throttling iPhones, which in all seriousness means that they make your iPhone essentially work like crap, so you buy a new one. So now they're being sued internationally for throttling iPhones. And they're saying that they are now sunsetting, which means they're turning off old iPhones in different countries. Because the iPhone 12 is not selling, because all the smart people, such as, pardonnez-moi, I don't know what that means, but I think it means me.
I don't
me.
Know either, but okay.
Yeah. I think that means excuse me.
Okay.
You know. Anyway, the point is, for people like me who are waiting to force their wives to buy iPhone 13s, which is less than a year away now, we're about 7 months away, 8 months away. The projected date is September 24th of 2021. Booyah, bitches. The iPhone 13 is going to come out. I'm getting a Supermax. You just know that today so I can afford the iPhone later. That's a Yelp joke. Anyway, the point is they're being sued. Do you care that they throttle old
Absolutely,
iPhones?
I care.
You
Absolutely
do?
Absolutely, I care. That's shady as hell, man. Not everybody, especially in a time like this, not everybody can afford to, you know, buy the new iPhone every 2 years or whatever.
Why do you
got to
play
dude?
The coronavirus
card? I'm just saying, like, it's BS. Like, this is what frustrates me sometimes about the way business is running in our world and in our country specifically. I paid you whatever the cost of the phone was.
$1,000.
$1,000, sure, whatever, right? I paid you the money. So now you're so greedy. It's not good enough that I paid you. You're so greedy that you got to throttle my device, so I'll buy another one.
Yes.
What if I don't want to buy another one yet?
Go buy an Android.
Well, it's called trash, business. Bro. No, it's not, dude. It's called taking people's money when you don't need to be taking people's money.
First of all, rich people like me don't care because we always have a new iPhone.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. It does piss me off a little bit. But I'm the guy who buys a new iPhone pretty much every 2 years. And
not everyone's as fortunate, and that's the part that really frustrates me.
That's true. It is profit taking. There is no, wow, look at you getting pissed off.
It's BS, dude. This phone right here, this phone should last a decade. That's how good this phone is. But it won't because they're going to throttle it and make me buy the 13. Now, needless to say, I'm still going to buy the 13 because I want it because it's a better phone.
I want it.
But I'm saying that somebody who paid for this phone, should not be forced to buy a 13 or a 12 or whatever the next gen is.
I love that you've become a humanitarian, Jake.
I haven't become a humanitarian. I'm just telling you.
Fuck the rest of the world. Yeah. I just don't want to pull out for a new iPhone.
Yeah.
That's what fucking ticks me the fuck off.
I'm serious, bro. It's not cool. It's not cool.
It makes me a loving father and a decent human being.
No, it doesn't. All right, that's it. Show's over. Make sure you find us on YouTube.
Dude.
The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show
People
on YouTube.
Will die.
No, they won't. Only if you don't play the music right now, they will die. Hit the subscribe button. Search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. To hear all of Angry Jake's takes. Where he saves the monkeys and shuts down Apple. On Mel Kiper's Big Board. See you tomorrow.
Throttling.